Under the Golden Dome is supported by the Iowa Bankers Association. Bankers across Iowa are ready to help Iowans reach their financial goals to get them where they want to go. Learn about the difference of Iowa banks by following Iowa Bankers on Facebook and Twitter.
From Iowa Public Radio News, this is Under the Golden Dome, a weekly podcast about the legislative session. I'm John Pemble.
We'll bring SSB 3084 to order here for the subcommittee.
There aren't many empty rooms at the Capitol this week because a high number of bills are assigned to subcommittees. Subcommittees are three members of a committee that seek input and make a decision as to whether a bill moves to a full committee. In the Senate's lobby, two subcommittees are meeting at the same time. There's just a few feet separating them. They each meet at a table surrounded by lobbyists, lawyers, interested parties to offer their expertise or opinion, and of course, reporters. Chair of the State Government Subcommittee, Robbie Smith, calls his meeting to order with Todd Bowman and Jim Carlin to talk about a law most people don't know is a law.
So basically, this is dealing with the personal importation of alcoholic liquor under current Iowa law. We have for liquor, if you bring it from out of state, it is one bottle, and out of country, it is four bottles. Currently, there is no amount for wine. There's no amount for beer.
Here's an example. There is a popular Wisconsin brewery called New Glarus. They do not sell their beer outside of Wisconsin. This means if you see a New Glarus beer in Iowa, it's illegal because it could not have been purchased through a store that receives alcohol through the Iowa Alcoholic Beverages Division. Lobbyist for the Iowa Brewers Guild, Jim Obradovich, supports the bill.
Glad that you're moving forward to recognize there was a hole in the law there that's been created over time, and it's a good way to get that taken care of, so we thank you.
The bill has two provisions allowing alcohol purchased from another state to come to Iowa. One is for people who are moving to the state with a large collection, like a person's wine cellar. Member of the subcommittee Todd Bowman wants Chair Robbie Smith to clarify the difference between someone going across state lines to bring back alcohol versus someone moving to Iowa with a large collection.
When I read this bill, we're talking about two different groups. We're talking about a waiver that would be limited to individuals who are domiciled outside the state within 1 year. And so this poses different changes to them. So the transition from moving from Wisconsin or Illinois to Iowa would change in regard to what they can bring with them legally, correct?
It would not. So under current law, the limits, so the 1 to 4 when you're talking about liquor. So if you're moving from Wisconsin, it's currently one. If they bring one bottle of wine with them, they can't bring it in with them to the state of Iowa. This would allow them to go up to 6. If they have 7 or more, then they need to apply to Administrator Larson, and he would make that determination.
Smith is referring to Stephen Larson, the administrator for the Iowa Alcoholic Beverages Division.
He would ask, have you been collecting this over a number of years? Show me some receipts. If you probably have 10 bottles, he's going to say, welcome to the state of Iowa. If you say, I have 10,000 bottles, he's going to say, show me the records on that. And that was something that Administrator Larson and I came up with. We didn't want to set an arbitrary number. We didn't want to set 15, 25, because what about the person that has 26?
The division administrator Larson isn't present, but their government relations officer, Stephanie Strauss, is. She says this kind of scenario will need more clarity.
The waiver is, that new subsection is amending section 12310, which is the rules section of our chapter. So we interpret that as the division would have to create rules for this process.
It's a bit hard to hear Strauss with the other subcommittee happening a few feet away, but she says it's likely the Alcoholic Beverages Division will have to create rules for this process. Senator Bowman moves on to the provision about residents of Iowa who want to bring alcohol back to the state, like those who live on a border in Davenport who are minutes away from Illinois.
They go across the river. Maybe they're shopping. Maybe they're going to a Cubs game. Maybe they're doing whatever, and they bring back with them. What's the new limit? What's your bill changing in regard to the law that impacts their ability to bring back? So currently you said that there's zero. They can't bring any beer into the state. They can't bring any wine, but they can bring one bottle of hard alcohol. Correct?
Yes, correct.
So how does your bill change that provision?
Okay. All right. So the first thing, so you wanted me to answer on your scenario. So when you say liquor, wine, and beer, it's going to take me a little while to answer your questions. I'll be more than happy to do that. So the first one would be liquor. So currently, under Iowa law, if you go to the state of Illinois under your scenario and you buy one bottle and carry it back in your trunk, you are fine. If you buy two bottles, you are currently breaking the law of Iowa. This would allow someone to carry up to six bottles and cross the border, and then they would not be breaking the law.
Question. Is there any deference to the size? I mean, you got, when you say a bottle, does it matter the size of the bottle? Yes. Or is it by fluid ounces?
So when I say bottle, I just say that. So when people talk about six bottles, it would be 1.5 liters, so it would be 9 liters.
Adds
up to 9 liters. That's
okay.
Correct.
Thank you.
So your next...
And then the beer.
Yeah, so your next scenario. Are we good on liquor now?
Yep.
Okay. So the next one would be wine. Currently, no matter what the size of the bottle, you would be breaking the law if you bring one bottle of wine across state line. This would allow up to six bottles, 9 liters. So your next scenario would be wine. I'm sorry, beer.
9 liters again.
9 liters for wine, correct?
Okay.
So your next one would be beer.
Isn't that 1.5 liters?
Lawyers surrounding the subcommittee table are correcting Smith about the language presently written in the bill. It's not uncommon at this point in a subcommittee for revisions, corrections, or to hear an amendment proposed. The back and forth between everyone is less formal than a full committee. It allows for a lot of flexibility. In this case, it's a matter of clarifying that 9 liters is what will be in the bill, which is the equivalent of six standard bottles of, say, something like a fifth of whiskey.
So the beer would be 48 cans. Cans of beer, currently under your scenario, if you're in Illinois, one beer would be breaking the law. This would allow, I'm assuming no one has open container. This would be closed container.
Right.
Okay. So I know you like to ask lots of scenarios, so I just wanted to make sure I covered myself. So 48 cans, and that is, I didn't do the math on that. How much is 48 cans, Ed?
Smith looks to lawyer Ed Cook, who is with the Legal Services Division of the Legislative Services Agency. Cook is reading the current version of the bill and offering suggestions for modifications based on what he is hearing the senators say they think is in the bill or what they may want to be in the bill. Senator Bowman moves on to ask how the law will be enforced.
I read an article this summer about the lack, and maybe where'd our administrator... Stephanie, right? Stephanie could talk about, because I think they were interviewed in this story from the Telegraph Herald, which has the same kind of scenario as your city does, Davenport being right across the river, where they said basically nobody is being ticketed or punished for this particular crime, that there's no enforcement mechanism other than, somebody being pulled over accidentally for... speeding or texting and driving or something like that, and their beers are piled up or their cans or bottles are piled up in sight that they say, hey, what are you doing here? What's all this in the back? And so basically there's no enforcement. So is this going to change anything in regard to enforcement, or is this just kind of a feel-good thing?
What do you mean by feel-good?
Well, I'm just trying to say that I have Dubuque grocers that sell alcohol in Dubuque, and they're competing against East Dubuque, and their laws are different over there. They bring that, they believe Iowans go over there and purchase alcohol, bring it back, and consume it for their own personal use. Okay, that's happening. And right now, it's zero and zero. You're going to say it's going to move up, but what are we going to do to enforce? Because nothing's being enforced now with even tougher standards than what you're suggesting this bill would change. So I'm just asking, what are we going to do different in regard to enforcement?
So we're lawmakers, so we make laws. We draw lines here at the legislature. That's what our job is. We are drawing a line in this bill, and I'm open up to moving this. I am not married to six bottles. I'm not married to 48 cans. If we want to raise or lower that, I'm more than happy to take a look at that. I'm more than happy to take a look. I'm always willing to work to make a bill better. If you want to look at if you have a certain amount that you're carrying over in your trunk and you want to have a penalty enhancer on that, I'm more than happy to take a look at that. As it comes for enforcement, I guess the answer would be that if someone's breaking the law, whatever law they're breaking, if a police officer sees that, they can ticket them, and that's their job. And as of right now, I've not had one police officer ever stop me and come up to me and say, I'm not enforcing that law. I believe police officers are enforcing this law when they stop someone and they are given the right to search the vehicle, because you have to have a search warrant to do that. So that's part of the problem too. I'm not going to start telling people to search vehicles because they think something might be in there. They have to do it lawfully, and they're going to give a ticket. Current law or this new law, we're just allowing people to have extra couple bottles in their trunk to bring it over. And currently, if they have one bottle, they're breaking the law. I do not want citizens that want to follow the law. I encourage every citizen to follow the law. And when they, if they know that the law currently is not one bottle, they're not going to break the law. This just allows six bottles to come across. Okay. Did I answer your question?
You did. It brings up another. So I appreciate what I think your intent is here to improve things for Iowans that want to move to Iowa and other Iowans that want to bring a certain small level of alcohol from other states. So my point of the question was, and I hope you didn't take it the wrong way, it wasn't to sabotage your bill. It was the question of enforcement in regard to moving forward, because while we'll have to do a really good job of communicating to Iowans this new change in law, because I'm afraid most Iowans don't even know what the existing law is. Now you're making it somewhat more complicated, but improved, okay? But we'll need to educate people on what they can and can't do. And my other point was the fact that police aren't doing their job. I think you misunderstood. It's the fact that they're only going to be able to enforce it if, you know, they're breaking some other law, a secondary offense, if you will. And so, you know, in other areas of our society, we have ways the police, the executive branch has means of trying to enforce their law. And right now, nothing's being really enforced, is what my point was. And so I'm curious if this bill changed anything in regard to that, to help them enforce this improved or this different bill.
There's one thing you said that I do have a problem with, is that to say that this bill is making it more complicated, I don't understand how you come up with this conclusion, because currently, here's the rules. So liquor, if one's out of state, so let's go through this scenario. So you tell me what is easier to explain to the public. So if you buy one bottle of liquor out of state, you're okay. If you're on a trip overseas, you can bring four back. Oh, but if it's wine, then it's zero. And if it's beer, then it's zero. You're telling me that is simpler than me saying six bottles of wine, six bottles of liquor, no matter where you get it at, and 48 cans of beer. This is about as simple as a bill can get on that. So I do take offense to you saying that this is more complicated on that.
I didn't say it was more complicated. I said that this bill is changing something that most Iowans don't know what the current law is.
And they're changing it to a
different. Well, there's a lot more different numbers. So there's different numbers in regard to 9 liters and all these other numbers. So they're going to have to know what those limits are. That's what I said. So I'm good. I'm going to hold off on signing till I learn a little bit more about this. Obviously, you've been looking at this for quite some time, and this is the first, you know, I got the bill a week ago and have a lot of questions.
All right. Thank you, Senator Bowman. Any more questions for anybody? All right, we're done. Thank you.
Bowman doesn't sign on to this bill, but Smith and Jim Carlin do. The bill will advance to the full state government committee. Right now, if a person brings in any beer or wine or more than one bottle of hard liquor into the state, it is a serious misdemeanor. Punishment is a fine not less than $315 and no more than $1,875. It can include jail time for up to 1 year. The proposed bill does not change the penalty for those exceeding whatever limits are to be decided. You are listening to Under the Golden Dome, a weekly podcast about the legislative session. I'm John Pemble. There are many traffic cameras across the state, but only a few are designed to monitor traffic violations and result in the issuance of a citation. Automatic traffic enforcement cameras detecting speed violations have been on interstates in Cedar Rapids, Sioux City, and Des Moines. Their observations are no longer resulting in tickets after the Department of Transportation ordered them to stop doing this in 2015. They are still on measuring speeds, but no tickets are being issued as a result of these interstate cameras. There is a bill gaining traction that will permanently ban these cameras as well as any others used to issue a moving violation. It has Republican support from Senator Brad Zahn and Representative Bobby Kaufman. On Monday, they were guests on our talk show River to River, hosted by Ben Kiefer. The legislators are joined by Sergeant Paul Parizik, Public Information Officer with the Des Moines Police Department. Parizik says the police are in favor of keeping the automatic traffic enforcement cameras because it is a safety issue.
And we have seen a decrease in crashes, particularly at our intersection cameras, where we specifically targeted areas where we saw high numbers of broadside crashes or right angle crashes, where people are most likely to be seriously injured when those crashes occur. And we've seen a significant reduction in those over the years. One of the things that we have noticed with the speed cameras that, it's always going to baffle us, but every year over the past 5 years, with the exception of 2014, we've seen a significant increase in the number of citations issued. So where our goal might be voluntary compliance, the camera's not the deterrent that we would hope it to be. So I know Senator Zahn and I were talking right before we started, and he made the comment that we think this is kind of a generational thing, and I tend to agree with him. And it kind of goes along the lines with texting and driving. That's a generational thing. We had to.
So younger people are the ones more likely to speed?
I think that's the case. Again, it's who the car's registered to. That's who gets the citation. Conversations that I've had in the community, people are like, hey, man, I'll pay $65. That's nothing. I need to get where I'm going. But we do know that when we turned off the freeway camera, the freeway camera in Des Moines is off. It does still collect data, and we're consistently seeing high speeds well over 100 miles an hour, and that's something that we didn't see while that camera was on. You might see that occasionally, but
speeds and also, I don't think you've mentioned this. I've heard this in the debate, Sergeant, is that this allows technology to do some work that would otherwise have to be done by a police officer. So you can have, when you have these speed cameras, you have more resources because the police officers can be out doing things that technology can't.
And that's true. And Des Moines is in kind of a unique circumstance, and it's nothing to do with traffic enforcement, but we're running about 30 cops short. So anything we can do to make better use of the technology that's available to us. So a lot of these intersections that we chose the red light cameras at, and then the speed camera on 235 were selected because those are areas where traditional law enforcement, policing, it just isn't safe or it's not practical. With the reconstruction of 235 many years ago, we lost a lot of shoulder space, and it's just not safe to put our people out there. So this did help us out in that fact. We were trying to work a little smarter and do more with less. Now here's where we're at. Here's the debate.
Okay. Representative Kaufman, you're from the Muscatine area. Have you had traffic cameras in the Muscatine area?
Yes, actually Muscatine, the city of Muscatine, is a city that utilizes these cameras more so than most. And, I respect everything that the officer just said, and there are numerous law enforcement officers that came to our subcommittee and our committee and have reached out to me that are in total opposition, and I respect their viewpoint. But I also come at this from a law enforcement perspective, channeling my local law enforcement back home. My sheriff, Sheriff C.J. Ryan, who's as law and order as anybody you'll ever meet, has been a policeman for 23 years, is the sheriff of the county that utilizes these cameras just as much as anybody as anyone else that is the city of Muscatine. And he is vehemently and adamantly opposed to these cameras. And he comes at it from the perspective of a traffic stop is an investigation. An officer can analyze whether someone, A, has their insurance valid, a driver's license valid, whether they've been drinking, whether they're impaired, and it's an investigation. He just he does not like this automatic policing powers giving to both technology and a private company. And he's not alone. I've had several law enforcement officers, so I think this is a split issue when it comes to law enforcement.
Instead of relying on people, sheriffs or whoever, why not rely simply on the data? The data, Sergeant Parizic, does the data in Des Moines' case give a clear picture, or is it somewhat ambiguous when you look at the data?
Well, that's a tough one to answer because with our mobile speed cameras, obviously, we move those around. We move those around in response to citizen complaints, and speed is the number one citizen complaint that we receive. So the data there, like I said, we see an increase in this so that the deterrent factor of these machines isn't landing where we want it to land. But you can't argue with the reduction in accidents. So we think the data looks great, and we could talk all day long, and this is a conversation that we have at the station quite a bit, is we can talk all day long about stats. The conversation needs to be what we're going to do to change those stats. And, you know, this is just one little piece of that.
Mm-hmm. Senator Zahn, you're a Republican. Bobby Kaufman is a Republican. Republicans like to say they stand for local control. Why take this out of the hands of local officials? Shouldn't authorities in law enforcement, together with city officials in Des Moines or Cedar Rapids, best know how to police their speed limits and red lights?
Well, I certainly was a former mayor. I like local control, and it's the job of the legislature to look over what's being done in the state, and I think these traffic enforcement cameras are an abuse to the citizens of the state of Iowa based on, you know, if you're rich, you can get as many tickets as you want. It doesn't go against your license through the DOT, or it doesn't go against your insurance. And I just think it's unfortunate. There was a community in southeast Iowa of a population of 1,300 that they were considering, the council's considering, putting these traffic enforcement cameras on their town square. I'm going to guess there's probably not a lot of accidents around that town square. And so it's troubling, and I think the state needs to come in and certainly make some changes.
And I would concur. I would, too, push back against local control argument. For instance, back in Cedar Rapids, in my neck of the woods, Interstate 380 isn't the property of the city of Cedar Rapids. Interstate 380 is a publicly funded entity that everybody in the whole state can use. And also, I agree with Senator Zahn. It is the role of the legislature to step in when local control is interfering with your individual constitutional rights.
Yeah, even though it's an interstate when it goes winding through Cedar Rapids, that is local law enforcement that has to police that area, right? We don't have a lot of state patrol policing that area, and it is within the city limits, right?
It is, but
Kaufman?
It is, but as I said, law enforcement, while I respect those that are opposed to me, there is certainly a strong support group within law enforcement, so you can't just say this is with or against. There is definitely some disagreement.
Mm-hmm. Sergeant Parizic of the Des Moines Police Department, tell us a little bit how the process works, because you've heard it, and I'm sure our lawmakers have heard it too, that people feel that it's just not fair that this technology making a decision, replacing people, making decision about, you know, you being able to plead your case, all of a sudden this picture shows up in your mail. How does the process work for you? Is the police department involved in a review of the picture? What happens? Let's say I speed on 235 in a former time and have my picture taken. What happens, and how is the police department involved?
It's a two-step. Well, actually, more than two-step. I'll tell you how it happened when it happened to me, because I got one on 235, and this is how it happened.
Congratulations.
This is how it happened. So the equipment's owned by Gatso, and we contract with them. The photograph's taken. The cameras are calibrated periodically throughout the year to make sure that they're doing what they're supposed to be doing, and that the readings are accurate. We give you an 11-mile-an-hour buffer. Some of that is just in case that the radar may not be correct or just off a little bit. Then Gatzo records the violations. They send them down to the police department where they're all reviewed by a police officer. You can't really review a speeding violation that way. I mean, there's the photograph, there's the car, there's the reading, that's that. The red light violations and the no right turn on red violations, those are reviewed by a police officer, and then those citations are sent out. And then from that point on, there is an appeal process. If you want to appeal it, you can come down to the city and take care of that. The fine is $65 to start out with at 11 miles an hour over the speed limit, which if you got that ticket from a cop, it'd be $168. So I'm not saying it's a good deal. I'm just saying that we've tried to put some thought into doing this fairly and with some equity around. As far as if I comment a little bit on the local control piece, I totally agree with these two politicians when they say, hey, the legislator needs to step in if there's something wrong. And you're absolutely right. If it doesn't pass the smell test, if you're talking about like the city square that you're talking about, or, you know, what they call a traditional Iowa speed trap where it's going 55, 45, 35, 25 as you enter into a small town. Yeah, that's probably not going to pass that test, at least me as a citizen looking out. But when I look again at the data on the crashes, or I look at the speeds of 105, 106 on the freeway, I think it's worth the effort and worth what little infringement upon that there may be upon somebody's rights to get us to encourage some voluntary compliance to lower these speeds and to make it safe for people to move.
Representative Kaufman, what do you envision happening here? And also a quick word about, will there be exceptions? Are areas that are deemed dangerous going to be allowed to have traffic cameras?
You know, I'm in this state house, you can never say that everything is completely final until it's complete and final. Our goal in the house is to proceed with a complete ban. If someone breaks some sort of compelling case where we get nothing or something, certainly I'm willing to listen to that. But I think that right now in the house, we're going to proceed with the full ban.
Anything to add to that, Senator Zahn?
Yes, we're going to have the Judiciary Committee, which I chair. It is on the agenda for tomorrow. My intention is an outright ban with no exceptions.
Senator Brad Zahn with Representative Bobby Kaufman and Des Moines Police Sergeant Paul Parizik. They are talking about a legislative ban on traffic enforcement cameras during our Monday talk show, River to River, hosted by Ben Kiefer. The next day, Senator Zahn chairs the Judiciary Committee and brings up Senate Study Bill 3025, an act prohibiting the use of automated or remote systems for traffic enforcement. This includes portable cameras that appear in neighborhoods. Before he makes his opening statement, he turns control over to the vice chair.
At this time, I'd ask Senator Dawson to pass the gavel over to you for Senate Study Bill 3025.
Zahn says the traffic enforcement cameras are an epidemic.
First of all, I want to say there's two things that make this difficult. First is that a lot of our friends that are in public safety or law enforcement, I don't like to be on the opposite side of the table in regards to that, because we've got a lot of good people out there. And we had a subcommittee where we had several police departments that showed up in regards to that. And most importantly, this is not to encourage breaking the laws. Everyone should obey the traffic laws that are in place. But like I mentioned earlier, it certainly has been expanded in the state of Iowa. And I'm not going to go through everything we've talked about. We've talked about this. I started with Senator Ward many years ago, probably 10 years ago, when we started having this conversation, when these out of the country, foreign-based companies were coming in and placing these cameras. For some of the people that aren't familiar, there is no capital investment by the local communities to put these cameras up. And that return is literally millions of dollars that are going to these foreign-based companies. Data has proven in the past when Clive, the city of Clive, had the red light cameras, that there's a 21% increase in regards to rear end accidents. Now, the city of Clive has removed those cameras. On 380, as you know, that there's right now, it's in the courts, but the Department of Transportation asked that all the traffic enforcement cameras be taken off of the interstates and the highways that they have jurisdiction over. Since they've turned off those cameras, there has been a decrease in accidents. where all these cameras are out, and particularly the speed cameras, it sets an artificial speed limit, anywhere from a 10 miles more. So if it's a 60 mile an hour speed limit, like such as the Des Moines I-235, you could actually go 71 miles an hour. And if you go under 71 miles an hour, you would not get a ticket. If you're wealthy, you can get as many tickets as you want, because number one, it's not applied against your insurance. Number two, it doesn't have any communication with the Department of Transportation in regards to tickets, which where a law enforcement person issues those tickets. And most importantly, it goes against, I think, what the foundation of the country and our court system is where you get to, you're innocent until proven guilty.
Senator Tony Bisignano says he and Zahn couldn't be on more opposite ends of the spectrum for this bill. He compares this to other legislation in this Republican-controlled legislature.
This comes back to a lot of the legislative action that was taken last year that encroaches on home rule, that encroaches on local control of their public, their public safety. This legislature has become the state school board and the state city council and the state board of supervisors. Not our role. We know our role. Our role is to set a statewide policy. If the state chooses not to do cameras on state highways, the state has the right to do that. I find nothing that allows the state to tell local government how to enforce the traffic public safety. And when we talk about, you know, fleecing the public, you're fleecing the public when you tell them how they get to raise their funds, how they get to spend their funds. And the one thing that I have to just make issue with what you said is, by making people stop at red lights, we've increased rear-end collisions. What does that mean? I mean, what does that really mean? Because we make you stop, which is what the law says, if you do stop, you're more likely to get rear-ended than if you run red lights. I mean, that absolutely holds nothing with me. You're taking away $12 million from local governments because you have a philosophical opposition to somehow to control death speeds. And when we're talking I-235, and Senator, you live in the community, so you're on 235 probably as frequent as the rest of us. When you're going in a 60-mile-an-hour zone and you're going 65, generally is what I will do, I'll go 65, but I get passed like I'm stopped. You're putting lives on the line. You're putting innocent lives on the line. And then when you say you respect public safety, how could you respect public safety when you take away their right to enforce the law, and then you tell them the only way to enforce that law is to set up radar on a freeway that endangers their life? There's a stretch of the I-235 that's too narrow to put a police officer on the side of the road in a radar system or to get out of his car to go issue a ticket. Now, when one police officer dies in this community, or two, as Des Moines lost in a traffic accident, very unfortunate, the whole community collapsed because of our sorrow of what happened. And that was a freak accident, per se. Someone across the median came up and hit them head on. But to deliberately put their lives in jeopardy by demanding that they have only one way to enforce public safety is to get out of their car and walk on the freeway doesn't show any respect. But if we lost an officer with that, again, our community would collapse and we'd be heartbroken. To take away $3.1 million from the city of Des Moines and a city in distress is unconscionable for this legislature to do. And you can have all the philosophical differences you have with cameras, just as I say to everyone else who complains, slow down. Speed kills. We know that.
Senator Julian Garrett says Bisignano is misstating what home rule is.
They're equating home rule with letting local governments do anything they want to do, and that's not what home rule is. Here's what home rule is, years ago, the law in Iowa was that local governments could only do what they were specifically allowed to do by the state. Very restrictive law. We changed that. Now we have home rule. What home rule says is local governments can do what they want to do as long as it's not in conflict with state law. It doesn't mean they can do whatever they want to do, only if it's not in conflict with state law. So it doesn't apply to any specific right. So if the state passes a law on a particular subject that restricts what local governments can do, that's what home rule is about. That's consistent with home rule. It's not a violation of home rule. So I just wanted to take this opportunity to try to clarify that a little bit, because I have heard that statement now over the last two or three weeks quite a few times, and that really isn't what home rule is. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Bisignano.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Garrett, I appreciate your explanation of home rule. But let's look at it this way. When traffic cameras came in, there wasn't a state law, as I understood it. And so they implemented it. And now state comes in and makes a law that takes away their right to home rule, because it started out as home rule. Unless I'm wrong with that, and I possibly could be wrong. But it sounds like to me that whatever the state doesn't mandate, that local governments then could step in and fill that void by what they feel by local ordinance or resolution. But then when state law decides politically to, you know, we're either smarter or we're, you know, we're lobbied so that we negate that right, then you are really violating the intent of home rule. And that's what bothers me. And especially when I look at the amount of money that we're taking out of local governments. And there seems to be a real lack of respect in this legislature on local governments. It's a trend. Des Moines puts their money in the police operating budget. It's not going to the general fund, so it's paying, you know, some bureaucrat somewhere, or, you know, to travel, whatever. It goes back in the public safety fund. And this is how we buy our bulletproof vests. This is how we buy all the equipment that we need to protect our officers. Where are they going to get it? Where are they going to get it? We've got a limitation for counties on mental health. Who are we to tell counties, again, on mental health what they choose to spend on their own constituents? But we do. I don't understand it. I'd like someone to explain why we're so much smarter than the people closest to the fire. And we've always said the best government is the government closest to you. And you keep taking that buffer away. So you can't have it both ways. If you think the best government is the government the closest, then back away and let local government control local government. And let them be held accountable for their budgets. And if the citizens of Des Moines don't like it, they have a ballot box, the same way as our constituents do. But I do not appreciate the trend and direction that this legislature is taking in trying to control every aspect of local government. I don't know. I know my local officials. You all know your local officials. I don't know why you don't like them, and I don't know why you don't trust them. I don't know. I couldn't have a cup of coffee with you if I was a city councilman in good faith and tell you you're doing a good job when you're doing my job. Do your own job. They don't think we're doing that great a job. Maybe we need that as a distraction. Maybe that's what we need. We distract the idiocy that we do in this Capitol by going after local government. And my constituents, you're not going to answer, you know, their communication to you. You're going to see, oh, Des Moines, Iowa, click, delete. But my city councilman can't do that. He's held responsible every single day. Give them the respect they deserve. They're your friends. They're your colleagues. They're your leaders. Why don't you show them the same respect that you expect? That's all I ask. Treat those like you'd like to be treated.
Any other senators? Senator Zahn, you're in order.
Thank you. I'd like to respond to my good friend, Senator Bisignano, and I mean that sincerely. First of all, I don't click and delete Des Moines residents. I was born and raised in Des Moines, South Side, you know that. And I think I got a great relationship with the Des Moines City Council. What you insinuated about home rule doesn't apply with me. It's not something I believe because I was an old mayor. I liked home rule. I like that we give them flexibility. In this particular instance, they've overstepped. Why I think they've overstepped is they've taken advantage of people. You're rich, you can get as many of these tickets as you want. Think about the people that get these tickets. We all try to follow the laws best we can, some of the lower income people. You talked about the rear end accidents. I'll tell you what happens is the intersection, I live out in Urbandale, and the intersection in Hickman and the interstate, you can see where they have that traffic. You'll see skid marks everywhere because people have trained themselves that they've got, the local people, that there's traffic enforcement cameras, and they get to that intersection, then they realize, wait, I'm not going to go through this yellow light, and they hit their brakes. And that is the logical explanation of why rear-end accidents increase on some of these. Respect to the Constitution you were talking about. Well, I believe in the Sixth Amendment. I talked about that in my opening comments. And I certainly drive the freeway every day when we're here at the Capitol and go through the area around Polk Boulevard as you're heading east. And what I've witnessed is everybody slows down and then they get about two or three blocks away and everybody speeds up. I'm just going to have to respectfully disagree with you because I think that this is about due process, and in the example of Windsor Heights University, I think most of us are familiar with that area. There is an example of a city that is taking advantage of their citizens. They put a mounted radar unit at the top of the hill around the 65th area, and you go downhill. They've switched the speed limit to 25 miles an hour, and at the bottom of the hill, there's another camera there. That is abusing citizens, and that is why I feel very passionate about this issue. So that'll conclude my closing comments.
On a vote that is mostly partisan, the Judiciary Committee votes 7-6 to advance the bill. The Republican voting against is Dan Dawson. The Democrat voting for is Rich Taylor. The bill could end up on the House floor for debate. This is the weekly podcast about the legislative session under the Golden Dome. I'm John Pemble.
Under the Golden Dome is supported by the Iowa Bankers Association. Bankers across Iowa are ready to help Iowans reach their financial goals to get them where they want to go. Learn about the difference of Iowa banks by following Iowa Bankers on Facebook and Twitter.
Last year, at the end of the session, the Senate passed Senate File 481. It's about the enforcement of immigration laws. It includes removing state funding to communities that make policies to not assist federal law enforcement when it comes to questioning a person's citizenship that later could result in their deportation. Communities that pass such policies are known as sanctuary cities. Last year, the Iowa City Council approved a resolution that none of their resources will be used toward enforcing federal immigration law. Part of Iowa City's resolution says the power to regulate immigration is exclusive to the federal government.
The federal government has an agency that's in charge of immigration and dealing with people who are in the country illegally, primarily through what we call ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency.
That's from the Senate debate in April 2017. Floor manager Julian Garrett explains what local law enforcement is supposed to do when they identify someone who may be in the country illegally.
So they issue what's called a detainer, a request to the local entity to turn the individual over to ICE rather than releasing them.
The bill has 10 sections, but the most significant is the ninth.
The Section 9 directs the Department of Management to adopt rules to ensure that state funds are denied uniformly. There's a provision for denying state funds to entities that intentionally violate the provision. And I want to point out the intention of that is not to withhold state funds, but it's to create a sanction that is serious enough so that the local entities will comply with the law. That's what we are, that's what the aim of the bill is. And I'm confident that when this bill is passed, that that will be the case. I can't imagine that local law enforcement would not comply with the state law in this regard.
It passes with all Republicans voting yes. Among the yes votes are four Democrats: Bowman, Danielson, Allen, and Reagan. The session ends, but that means now in 2018, the bill can come before the House. First, the bill goes before a subcommittee this week.
This is an issue that brings out great passion.
Representative Stephen Holt is the chair of the Public Safety Subcommittee. The room is packed with people.
I will have those that wish to speak sit at the end of the table here. So we'll have an opportunity for those who are here from the public to speak and also representatives from law enforcement or certain groups such as the Sheriffs and Deputies Association, those folks.
While this isn't a public hearing, it's similar. All subcommittees are open to the public. The chair can choose to have a comment period. Representative Holt is allowing people to speak for 2 minutes.
Good morning, and thanks for allowing me to speak. My name is Mark Prosser. I'm the Public Safety Director and Police Chief in the city of Storm Lake.
Prosser is opposed to the bill.
Law enforcement in our community and across the state works tirelessly to create relationships with our public. And we have really seen that that is where the greatest impact is for the reduction of crime and community safety. And having a bill such as this, first of all, is not necessary in the state of Iowa. It's not necessary for our jails and our law enforcement to effectively work and work in a positive fashion with our federal partners in criminal investigations. But just the peripheral conversations, the rumors, and so on, spread a wave of fear in our communities that greatly impact our ability to create, maintain, and grow relationships. In my community, 30 to 35 different ethnic groups in a community of about 12 to 13,000 people. And so those relationships are imperative that we are partners in working in crime prevention, that folks are not afraid to report crimes when they've been victimized. And subsequently, this type of legislation is legislation going after a problem that does not exist in the state of Iowa. And then subsequently, it also leads to our citizens and the people we serve and our partners in the community withdrawing from that partnership and impacting public safety.
Any questions? Sir, do you currently cooperate with federal authorities?
We have always cooperated with our federal partners in the midst of criminal investigations.
Police Chief for Marshalltown Michael Tupper also says the bill is in search of a problem that doesn't exist.
Nobody wants violent crime in their community. Nobody wants a crime period in their community. And I think Iowa law enforcement is doing a good job of building positive relationships within their communities. And I just do not think that this legislation is necessary. Thank you.
Subcommittee member Greg Hartzell has questions for Tupper.
Surely you're aware of situations throughout the country where there have been individuals who are in this country illegally and that are violently, you know, violating our laws and jeopardizing citizens and that have been detained for some time and then let go because of the local policies enacted, let go. Are you familiar with them? Are you saying that those don't exist, or are you?
I'm wondering why we're reacting to issues that might be occurring in other states. That's not been a problem here in Iowa, and I don't know of any such issue that's occurred here in Iowa where a local law enforcement agency hasn't cooperated with the federal government. I think we're again trying to solve a problem that does not exist in Iowa.
Okay, thank you.
Jody Matherly is the police chief in Iowa City. He brings up the city's resolution that may have influenced this bill.
As you all know, in January of 2017, the Iowa City Council produced a resolution. And that resolution was simply reaffirming the public safety role. It got labeled a sanctuary city, which we are not. It got labeled that we won't work with federal law enforcement efforts, which that's not true. And so much so that we were vetted by the federal government, and they said through U.S. Attorney Jeff Sessions here recently in letters, there's 29 cities that are, they're concerned about being sanctuary cities. We're not one of them.
Chief, I'm sorry, your time is...
Subcommittee member Wes Breckenridge has questions for Matherly.
Can you finish your comment, reference that classification from the federal government, reference Iowa City?
Sure. They've determined that we're not a sanctuary city, that we're effective with that resolution and doing the job that, that we can, so much so that violent crime in our city in the last year since that resolution has been in place has gone down 11%. We're doing it right.
So as far as doing business, when I say business, as far as making your public safe within your community, how you enforce and do that today in comparison prior to that resolution, has there been a change, or have you proceeded with that same strategy and policy that's worked for you?
Same strategy, and the only change, we've increased the communication with our immigrant community. They're working with us, and they're not afraid to step forward and talk to us and report violent crimes or any crimes. And that's been successful.
Thank you very much.
President Parcells, you had a question.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Thank you, Chief, for coming today. I believe the resolution you're referring to is Resolution 17-27 of Iowa City. Am I correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And it says here, the resolved, I'll skip all the whereases, but it says that except as necessary for public safety as determined by the police chief, the Iowa City Police Department shall not undertake any law enforcement action for the purpose of detecting the presence of undocumented persons or devote any public resources to the enforcement of federal immigration law. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you. So what we're saying, and so, but this is not prohibiting you from cooperating with federal law enforcement and immigration. Is that correct?
That's correct. We are working with them as much as we ever have, and we continue to do so.
So if I can put this in layman's terms, this is essentially saying we're not going to be an extension of ICE as a federal law enforcement, correct?
Their function and mission is very clear. Ours is very clear, and we've never combined the two, and we don't need to combine the two.
But if you were to have someone in your custody that that you suspect is here in this country illegally, there is nothing in this policy that would prohibit you from reaching out to the immigration and customs and enforcement. There would be nothing in there that prohibit you from doing that. Is that correct?
This gives me the latitude as police chief to set the tone for law enforcement in my community, and for violent crimes or something of a serious nature where we think that that's appropriate, that could happen. We have not had problems with our immigrant community, and that just hasn't needed to be done here recently.
So I'm just going to try to ask it a different way. So what you're saying is that you would not have an issue with yourself personally within your office or with the policy set forth by the city of Iowa City to reach out to federal authorities, federal agencies, to check up on the status of someone that you suspect is in the country illegally?
If it was needed, yes, that's correct.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Did you have another question?
Yeah, just a real quick question. As you perform the duties to keep your community safe, I'm trying to determine, okay, is the strategy that you've implemented into your law enforcement community helping apprehend and those individuals that are violating the law, breaking the law, that should be returned, are returned, and you're taking actions necessary for those individuals on violent crimes and so forth?
Yes, when we're making arrests for that, there's a system set up, the ICE system already, where we just had it happen last week. A person was lodged in the jail because of us, and the next day ICE picked them up. That notification system exists, and they deal with that. It's timely, it's accurate, and the system takes place. But we're not the ones doing that, nor should we be.
More guests speak. They are all in opposition to the bill. This meeting is limited to an hour, so Representative Holt takes the last few minutes to deliver closing remarks. He says there are cities across the country not cooperating with immigration law enforcement. He says even if Iowa doesn't share this, this law is still necessary.
This bill has a very simple goal: maintain the status quo. It seeks to prohibit any state agency or entity receiving taxpayer money from blocking cooperation with immigration authorities in the performance of their duties. A sanctuary, look it up in the dictionary, is a safe haven. Failure to cooperate with immigration authorities in the enforcement of our laws creates a safe haven for those who are in our country illegally. It would seem likely that those with violent criminal pasts or those with a strong interest in remaining hidden would also seek safe haven in sanctuary cities. We have ample evidence that this is true and that Americans are dying at the hands of violent or irresponsible illegal immigrants. In the case of Catherine Steinle, her killer testified he returned to San Francisco after deportation because he felt safer there. He felt safer in the safe haven of a sanctuary city. Sanctuary cities ignore their responsibility to uphold the law and protect their citizens. In October of 2013, Bill Hartzell saw his wife's 93-year-old grandmother bloodied and unconscious after being beaten and raped in her home by a 19-year-old who was not in this country legally. This was in Council Bluffs, Iowa. Is this type of individual not likely to seek safe haven in a sanctuary city? Sarah Root might be alive today had proper procedures been followed and deportation had occurred. Sanctuary cities would not allow the cooperation necessary to have deported the man responsible for killing Sarah Root while driving drunk. Sanctuary cities endanger the citizens of Iowa as well as our immigrant population. No Iowan should be harmed because someone is in this country illegally, could have been deported through cooperation with immigration authorities, but instead was released back into the community, as has happened numerous times across our nation. The majority of immigrants that are here illegally just came here for a better life. But there are also immigrants here illegally with violent criminal pasts, and by their very definition, a sanctuary city provides a safe haven for these individuals. I am saddened that certain communities appear to be putting ideology above the rule of law and political correctness ahead of the safety of its citizens, but they are, and that is why this legislation is necessary. I appreciate the concerns expressed related to the idea that this legislation would make our communities less safe by engendering fear. The argument, I believe, however, is flawed on a number of levels. This legislation will change nothing in the overwhelming majority of our communities because they are already cooperating with federal authorities. Additionally, individuals who are not here legally will always, to some degree, live with doubt and fear because they are aware that they are not here legally. This can only change by applying the rule of law, not abandoning it. We will never get control of immigration and our borders if we continue to allow sanctuaries where those crossing the border illegally feel they can find safe haven from our laws and courts of justice. Sanctuary cities place the interests of illegal immigrants ahead of that of their own citizens. Americans and Iowans understand this and overwhelmingly reject the concept of sanctuary cities. Those who support this legislation are at home, raising their families and going to work, and they expect us here in Des Moines to do our jobs. The safety of Iowans and our immigrant population is best served by enforcing the rule of law. This is why the Senate passed this bill with four Democrats joining in support. This bill will be moved to the full committee for consideration. Thank you for coming.
Some in the crowd chide the representative after he adjourns the meeting. The governor's office issued a press release supporting this kind of bill. It says Iowa City's ordinance moves a city closer to being a sanctuary city. This is Under the Golden Dome, a weekly podcast about the legislative session. I'm John Pemble. There is a bill designed to help curb forged prescriptions to help reduce the release of extra opioids. Instead of paper prescriptions, it would be electronic. It is supported by Senator Thomas Green, who is a retired pharmacist.
This is a step that we can do our part to ensure that the intended drug, the intended number of dosages is accurate.
There is also a bill for a syringe exchange to help mitigate some effects of increasing injection drug use. Next week, we will focus on committees and a gathering at the Capitol that pushes these initiatives forward. This weekly show gets a lot of help from our Statehouse reporter Joyce Russell and our talk show team producers Lindsay Boone, Ben Stanton, Emily Woodbury, and talk show host Ben Kiefer. Katarina Sestarik also contributed to today's show, as did Radio Iowa's Kay Henderson.
Iowa Public Radio's news program director is Catherine Perkins. Edit support comes from Iowa Public Radio news director Michael Leland. Every Friday, a new episode of Under the Golden Dome will pop up in your favorite podcast program, the Iowa Public Radio app, as well as our webpage, iowapublicradio.org. This is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.